Hi, my name is Johnny Depp, and I'm very, very, very happy and proud to be here with Chidio, as the work that they're doing is some of the most important work that anyone can do, which is to say that it's all about charity, it's all about giving back, it's all about helping those in need.
Thanks, Johnny. We agree. So what we're doing on this show is shining a light on charity leaders and celebrities having a positive impact on our world. The podcast is called What's Good. It's powered by Chidio, and I'm your host, Drew Hamilton. Today, we're talking to ex-Navy SEAL Ryan Birdman Parrott, who has founded a charity called the Bird's Eye View Project, which uses extreme sports to raise awareness for the extreme needs of veterans and first responders. Let's get to it and find out what's good. Ryan Birdman Parrott, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we'll backfill your story as we go, but let's capture the attention of the audience right off the bat. What is the Bird's Eye View Project?
It's a great question. You know, we've heard a lot about that question. The Bird's Eye View Project is a charity, and the idea behind this charity is there are so many veteran and first responder charities that are popping up around the country, and they're all doing great things. But people don't really understand the difference between all of them. They think we're all rolled into one, we're all doing the same thing, and that's not the case. So the idea behind the Bird's Eye View Project is let's get these charities we believe in viral. Let's tell the entire masses of America what they're doing, what problems we face, and how we actually fix them. And the idea behind going viral is how do we make it viral? You know, there's a lot of great stories out there. There's also a lot of videos out there on social media that are extreme sports worthy. And a lot of people love to watch a quick clip of somebody going crazy and doing a gnarly stunt. And so that's a little bit of my background is I do extreme sports for fun. And so we thought, let's tie the two together. Let's do extreme sports, go viral with these extreme sports clips videos, and then tie that to some substance. You know, tell everybody about why we're really doing this. We're risking it all for the people we love and support, and letting us tell their story to really elevate these charities to the next level. So in a nutshell, the Bird's Eye View Project is an independent marketing arm for the charities we support.
If people want to get info or they want to get involved, what's the best place to go for that information?
Look no further than birdseyeviewproject.org. We have every social media from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram up and running every single day. But birdseyeviewproject.org is where you can see good videos. We also have a YouTube channel, Bird's Eye View Project. So you can go to any one of these outlets and see our videos and follow along on this adventure.
One of the organizations that you support is Sons of the Flag. You have a little history with that as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Sons of the Flag is it's kind of got my heart wrapped up in it. You know, I founded Sons of the Flag in 2012 with a couple other gentlemen in Dallas, Texas. The idea behind Sons of the Flag is burn patients don't really receive the recognition or support that they so deserve. There's a lot of injuries that come out of the military, out of war, a lot of injuries that come out of being a first responder. A primary one is called burns, and there's just not a lot going on. There's not a lot of public awareness about burns, and it's such a horrific injury, a lifelong injury that just needs to be paid attention to. And so when I got out of the service, and mind you, I've been burned myself in the service. I got blown up in 2005 driving down the road in Iraq. And I was very fortunate where my burns were superficial. Some of the other guys in the car were actually burned a lot worse than I was. But that struck home to me as an injury that it's not something you can really do anything with in that time and place. But getting out after the service and meeting an Army soldier who was severely burned and saying, wow, we really do have a problem here. We need to look into it further. And the only way that we could actually move the pavement was to actually start an organization to actually counter down on burn care. And so Sons of the Flag essentially hires doctors in a residency to become burn surgeons or specialists. There's only about 200 accredited burn surgeons in this country, and there's over 450,000 people a year that get burned.
Wow.
So we're not even meeting the standard. And so that's why we've started it, to really harness in on bringing more doctors that are younger and eligible to the table to really help with burn care, but to also focus on research and development to bring this injury to the next phase, to the next level. So when you get injured, you go to the hospital, you get fixed, you go back to your normal life. That's Sons of the Flag.
Beautiful. And we'll hear about some of the other organizations in a bit, but I want to hear about the nickname Birdman. I'm guessing it's not because you're skinny.
That's funny. Funny. It could be. You never know in the military. You know, in the military, you get a plethora of nicknames. Usually it's because something you screw up. Sometimes heroes get nicknames because they're heroic. I'm not one of those guys, but I've definitely screwed up a lot. So the idea behind it was I was nicknamed Soup, and my other new guy was Sandwich. So that was kind of a funny parallel starting out in the group, in the SEAL teams. But moving forward, when we got blown up, I was shot straight through the turret hole, which they call the gunner's turret, shot straight through the Hummer and into the sky. And there's all kinds of talk about, did he go 1,000 feet or did he go 100 feet? Or I actually got blown up and shot straight up on top of the Hummer, and then I rolled off to the ground. But because I went flying, I got Birdman.
Got it. Wow. All right, May of, and we're going to hear a little bit more about your service as well, but May of 2017, it's going to be a big month for you. You're going to be attempting Operation Miracle Jump. What can you tell us about that?
So here's the deal with the jump. So we've really looked at this thing for, you know, this idea of the jump and the stunt was created about 5 years ago on a napkin. So I drew it. I just made this crazy event. And then I said, okay, let's push this out, see what kind of buzz we get, just to my friends' family on email. So I sent it out to my teammates in the SEALs, my friends here locally, and then my parents. And the first person to chime in was my father, saying, I got $1,000 to anybody who can convince my son not to do this. And so right off the bat, a couple of my friends chimed back in and said, hey, I'll take that bet. And it was one of my SEAL teammates that actually said, screw the money, do it, Bird. And it was funny because that's the way we roll. You know, we're all in all the time. And obviously, just writing it on a napkin doesn't make it happen. And there was a lot more logistics to it than that. So we shelved it. We put it away for a while and never really thought about it again. 5 years later, coming back to it, realizing that the only way that we were going to be able to get our charities out to the next level to really give public promotion using free applications like social media and viralness was to really incorporate something that's already viral, the extreme sports world. And so that's when that came right back out of the drawer and said, you know what? We got to tie the two together. Let's go for it. Extreme sports for extreme needs. And the Bird's Eye View project was born. We talked about doing it in May, and that's the theory was, okay, we've been working for about a year and a half on training up to the stunt because, mind you, I'm not a professional athlete. I play one on TV. I act like one, but I am not a professional athlete. But there's always where there's a will, there's a way. You can always do it. So I've surrounded myself with coaches that are elite, that are professional, that have been teaching me and putting me through the gauntlet of how to do this. The stunt has never been performed. It's never been attempted, so it will be a one-of-a-kind deal. Something that everybody's going to want to watch in on. But we've pushed the stunt back. So we were going to do it in May in Alaska. And logistically, that's a lot. It's a lot of capital to raise to do something in an offsite in Alaska. It's very hard to keep it live stream because it is Alaska, very dense terrain. And so we decided to bring it back closer in the United States to Northern California, Lake Tahoe area. And it'll probably end up going on the end of next year. During the winter season. So that way we have snow.
Well, you're documenting the whole journey, and you talked about the YouTube channel. You want to give that a plug one more time?
The YouTube channel, Bird's Eye View Project. You can go to YouTube and type in Bird's Eye View Project, and you can see our videos that we're posting out. Typically, you'll see our videos of our charities that we're supporting, but you'll see a lot of action-packed extreme sports, and it's the adventure, like you just said. We're continually training and doing new growth within the training to show you, wow, this is what it really takes to perform a stunt to this level. And so you get to follow the whole journey from soup to nuts.
And what's the latest? So is it going to be like a web series? Are you doing a long documentary? Both? Neither?
You know, this all started out as just a theory. Hey, let's make one video, go viral, and hopefully get millions and millions of views, and everybody will watch it and say, okay, cool, I want to donate, and I want to support these causes. And we realized that we had something special here. A lot bigger than we thought. So we said, all right, let's wrap this into maybe a full webisodic series so that every week or every couple weeks there'd be a new video that launches out so people could really continue on the journey with us. And it continually amazes us at how much this grows and how many people are excited by it. So now we're actually in talks right now to possibly make this a TV show. And that's the deal. This is real reality. And I say reality, I'm not talking about the Kardashians or anything like that we typically think or you know, tie in with reality TV show. This is real deal reality. Veterans, first responders, being very raw, doing hardcore things, and always doing it for a purpose. And you're going to get exactly what it is. It's not, you know, It's not all plugged together. It's not all scripted. None of that stuff. It's just, here's what we're going to do. Because you cannot script jumping off a mountain. Once you leap, it's on you, and you've got to make it happen. So that's what I love about it. It is everything you want out of a TV show. Who doesn't love supporting a veteran? Who doesn't love supporting a first responder? Let's truly show them we love them and support them, because that's the good side to it, is showing them the love. The bad side to it is the injuries that they face on a daily basis and how some of them aren't getting taken care of. That's our job as a charity, to take care of them.
So that was a great segue. You talked about once you jump off the mountain, it's not scripted, but in the trailer for the web series, they actually show you, yes, jumping off the mountain, and it didn't exactly go as planned, did it?
No, that's the beautiful thing. Like I said, I'm not a professional athlete, so I just play one on TV, and editing is a beautiful world. I can do some incredible things. But, yeah, my first wingsuit jump I ever did was, to say the least, terrible. You know, it's certain things. We pride ourselves in the military on trying to be as good as we can at every single thing, and we usually live up to that standard because we live in that world. But jumping my first wingsuit went chaotic. I could not believe it. I thought to myself, holy cow, is this how I'm going to die right now? And it wasn't nearly as dramatic as I make it sound right now, but to me it was terrifying. So that's the thing. You know, you cannot do it unless you do it. You can't understand it unless you do it.
I can understand how it would be terrifying when you're in the air and your life may be in the balance.
That's right.
All right, so I watched the latest YouTube clip. You're training from Twin Falls. So what's up with the mountain board fitted with snowboard boots? And is that it right there in your office?
That's it.
Beautiful. What's that?
So it's a custom board. We actually took a mountain board. A lot of people don't know what a mountain board is, but it's a board that, you know, you can't always snowboard. We can't always skateboard. Certain terrains dictate. So a mountain board was created with air-filled tires. It's got shocks. Some of them have springs. And it's maneuverable so that you can ride in sand dunes. You can ride on, you know, snowboard hills when there's no snow. And you can always attach a kite to it as well and use that. So it's just another application to move around on your feet locked in. We fashioned this board together with snowboard bindings and boots with an awesome company called Bonhever, who made these new snowboard bindings that are detachable. They come on and off very quickly. And we all joke with them about these bindings were designed more for our project than they were for commercial use. Really not the case, but they align with us so well. And so we put all this stuff together so that we could actually attempt the next portion of the stunt, which is actually putting a board on my feet and then base jumping it, because it's not typically done. There's been a lot of ski base done, which is going off cliffs with skis on and then releasing your skis. But snowboarding is very awkward. It's you stand sideways 90 degrees left or right. And so anytime you have a turn in your harness, it steers your canopy a certain direction. And so we had to really account for that and really look at every little level of the start to the finish of this piece to say, can this be done? And so that's what we did. We went out to Twin Falls, the Prine Bridge, which is the only bridge in the country that is legally allowed to be jumped 365 days a year. Spectators from around the world go to see it, see base jumpers live and jumping off the cliff saying, these guys are crazy. And we're looking at spectators saying, well, I wouldn't want to stand on the edge of this without jumping. You know, that's crazy. So yeah, testing it out, and successfully I jumped the board 8 times. So, you know, really nerve-wracking. I think everybody's heart rate all around us was nervous because this is new. But that's the neat thing about it. You know, that's stuff that goes viral, and then it's all for our cause.
Extreme sports for extreme needs. Support those who support us. Those are two catchy phrases that are on your website. I think they're great because they're easy. They're to the point. They explain what you're about. So did you come up with those, or do you have a wordsmith behind the scenes?
We have an incredible team. And that's, you know, the Extreme Sports for Extreme Needs. I think that came from one of our extreme sports athletes. I don't know exactly how they all came to be, but, you know, we say things all the time that just come into our mind because we all know what we're here for and we all know what we're doing on this project. But that's one thing we don't lack on this team is talent. So, you know, whenever it comes from something – that's the hard part about my job as the founder is I get a lot of the credit for where it's not due. but the fact is we have an incredible team of talent here.
All right, so speaking of extreme needs and those who support us, you currently support several charities. So do you want to just tell us about a few of them?
Sure. You know, so we looked at this and said, you know, there are a lot of charities out there. And, you know, obviously we pushed out the gauntlet saying, hey, submit your application and request to be a part of the project. We started to get a lot of different charities that were pushing back to us saying, oh, we'd love to. And so what we did was took each charity and we pushed them out to a group of independent auditors, not so much auditors, but independent grant readers to look at it and say, okay, these are organizations that we would fund. They meet the standard, because that's it. It's got to meet the standard. It's got to be clean and concise so that people know that their money's going to the right places. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. People are getting educated today on charities and how they're run, so they need to be aware of what's going on. We started to look at it and said, well, okay, this project, we don't know if we're gonna raise the bar or not. This is a first of a one of a kind type deal. If we have 1,000 charities in the mix, or 100 charities in the mix, and we don't produce any awareness or don't produce any money, well, then it's a bust. So we said, let's start out with the first one as small as can be. Let's choose 10 charities that are legitimate, that really cover down on different facets of injuries, so that we're not doubling up, and really promote them. Let's try to make them the go-to place through our extreme sports efforts. And so we chose charities that I personally have dealt with in the past, that I know, that I believe in, that surround us all the time. And that's another thing that I definitely want to hit on, is that charities just don't partner enough. And that's what we believe it should happen. We partner because we don't cover down as a burn foundation. We don't cover down on amputees. We don't cover down on post-traumatic stress. But there are charities that do. And so why wouldn't we all want to partner together so that we could really fix the whole well-rounded soldier or first responder out? Let's get them every bit of effort, every bit of help they can get, so they're 100% ready to go again. So we chose charities like Carry the Load, which is located in Dallas, Texas. The theory behind their organization is they wanted to bring back the meaning of Memorial Day. It's been lost. People use that as a deal to go light off fireworks and barbecue, and that's a part of it. But what is the true meaning of Memorial Day? Honor those who have gone before us, who have sacrificed their lives for this country so that we could do the barbecues and enjoy the fireworks. And so really, this organization chooses other charities as beneficiaries, and they do a 20-hour plus walk on the Katy Trail in Dallas. They do two national relays, one from the West Coast and one from the East Coast, and they all come here and surge into Dallas, Texas, where they do a 20-hour march down the Katy Trail to look at posters of veterans and first responders that have fallen doing what they love, doing what the jobs required, and hearing stories, sharing with people you're meeting on the trail. And it costs money to do it, and so all that money goes back into the charities that benefit from Carry the Load. One example of an organization. Another one is Adaptive Training Foundation. It's also located in Texas, in Dallas. And the idea behind this is Dave Abora, who is a former NFL linebacker, you know, incredible athlete, stopped playing in the NFL, couldn't really figure out what the next step was for him, and then decided, you know what, I want to get into fitness, I want to recover, I want to get guys strong again, and then started to realize that soldiers were just not benefiting from recovery. You lose a limb in the war, you get a wheelchair, you get a prosthetic, and you're kind of on your own. Well, what happens? Where's the rehabilitation? You know, soldiers, we pride ourselves on staying in shape, but if you don't know the way to get back in the gym and get yourself into shape, well, you're screwed. And so Dave Abora has taken it and built his gym called Adaptive Training Foundation to be able to give amputees the love and the workouts that they need to get hardcore again, to get fit again, and to really get meaning and purpose to drive on to do other things. So there's many other charities that we've selected. I could name them all off, and we could go through them if you'd like.
Might as well, because you're trying to raise awareness for them.
Sure.
We're trying to give you that megaphone, so take the opportunity.
I love it. We have another one called America's Mighty Warriors. This was founded by Debbie Lee, which is a Gold Star mother. She's the mother of the first Navy SEAL killed in the Iraq War, Mark Lee. So she started America's Mighty Warriors to support Gold Star families. And for those who don't know what Gold Star families are, a Gold Star family is a family who has lost a service member in the line of duty. And so, obviously, Mark was the first Navy SEAL killed in the Iraq War, and a very, very hard deal for all of us, but especially for Debbie. But she realized that Mark's last letter home that he wrote was to do good for others, to support others, and to never stop. And so she continues on by supporting other Gold Star families by hosting retreats. And she has a lot of programs that she's developed over the last 8 years with this program. But really hosting Gold Star family retreats, both for all military-wide and then for Naval Special Warfare, so that she could really show love to the families and just bring them together and say, hey, we've got your back. So it's really cool. There's a faith-based part to that. It's a really, really nice organization I wholeheartedly believe in. We have another organization that was started out of North Carolina at Fort Bragg called Duskin and Stevens Foundation. very incredible group of guys, a bunch of Green Berets, mostly current, I believe, started this organization to want to give back. Duskin and Stevens were two Green Berets that were killed in the war, and they thought, let's honor our two brothers by starting a foundation in their honor to give scholarships to kids and to really take care of our families who have lost somebody in the war. So they're doing great things. We've got another organization called Base Camp 40, and they call it Warriors in the Wild. So taking these different soldiers who have gotten out of the service, some who've been injured, some who are dealing with post-traumatic stress, multiple of injuries, and what is the one thing a soldier loves to do? Get his gun and go put his gear on and maybe fight, you know? But we can't do that anymore, especially when you're injured, or can you? And so he takes this gentleman named Paul Bristow, who's the founder, takes soldiers out into the field and hunts with them, shoots with them, fishes with them, and gets them back into the soldier they used to be in that mindset of, okay, let's move forward, let's press on. So that's Base Camp 40. We have another one called Rebuilding Warriors, which is a canine program started by a guy named Jeff Anderson out of California. And his theory was, I just want to get real dogs, real companion dogs, specific to the injury with the partner of the service member. So dogs can do many different things. You know, there's dogs that can pull wheelchairs. There's dogs that can deal with amputations. There's dogs that can deal with other types of injury, post-traumatic stress, but they're all different. And so you have to align that patient or that soldier with the right dog so that they bond and mesh well together and it does the right job. So he does that all around the country. And
that's fascinating.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, that's the thing about this. We get to do the extreme sports side, which is definitely fun and fast-paced and a lot of wildness, but the cause is everything. That's the real deal. And that's why I always say, you know, I only wish that athletes would take their likeness more and push it to these events. You know, people who go big for personal gain, I get it if that's their profession, but if they could just one time in their life take that and say, let's just tie a charity behind this, let's go big as we can go and support these organizations or this organization and really build them up, you could do so much good with that. And so that's our theory. That's what we're doing here, and hopefully a lot of people, you know, take that theory and run with it moving forward. So we have other organizations. Let's see. We have Sons of the Flag, which we've talked about. And by the way, all of these organizations, we harbor them underneath the Bird's Eye View Project. So the Bird's Eye View Project is a charity itself. And so 100% of the money that we raise online comes through our website, will go directly to these charities. We've been really, really working hard towards privately funding this project so that when people make a donation online, they know it's going to these charities split. And think about that diversification. You get a $5 donation from a million people who have viewed an extreme sports video, that's a lot of money. And so for a $5 simple donation, diversified over 10 charities, you can really make an impact on thousands of people. When you look at that, it's like, okay, that's just too easy. You never have been able to take $5 and make such an impact in our veterans and first responders. So here's your opportunity.
Yeah, and if you go to Bird's Eye View Project, the website, all the charities are listed there, so if they want to learn more, they can just go to Bird's Eye View Project.
That's right, and we have 9 of the 10 charities right now, so we're still working at that 10th. We pretty much will have that one locked in, and this is a first. So if you're a charity and you're listening to this, you know, don't think, oh, well, you know, if I didn't make the cut or I didn't know about you and I didn't get in, that, you know, we don't feel you're valuable. We chose 10 to do it right the first time, but that doesn't mean that our next run we're going to choose other charities. This is an ongoing deal. This is not just a one time, we're done. We're going to do this. We're going to build it right. We're going to make it strong. And hopefully people will look at it as the go-to place to say, we got good charities here we support. So there'll be another round and another application process, and we can get more people in. But we're going to knock out the first one here.
I like it. All right, well, let's get to know you a little bit. You served 8 years as a Navy SEAL. Is that correct?
Technically, I served 8 years in the military, but there's training time before becoming a SEAL.
Okay.
And so, but yeah, I guess it just gets wrapped up into an 8-year Navy SEAL.
All right, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that on the interwebs, so yeah. I wasn't sure how accurate that was.
Sure. Well, yeah.
So can you give us just some highlights from your service?
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, background is growing up in Detroit, Michigan, complete failure in school and just couldn't really figure out what my direction looked like. And it was a teacher that actually influenced me to want to be a SEAL. He was a Marine of Vietnam who is probably the most patriotic guy I've ever met. And when I say that, if you ever run across a man out of Clinton Township, Michigan named Tom Barnes, he's a motivational psychology teacher. You got to go up to him, and you will feel that patriotism come right off him. He runs around with an American flag like a crazy man. He's like 100 years old now, and he still is motivated 100 miles an hour and all about his country. And when I always say teachers are always talk, they always talk to the students as a whole, but every now and then they talk to an individual. And my teacher said, ladies and gentlemen, there's only one thing better than the Marine Corps, and that's United States Navy SEALs. And this is back in the 90s, you know, when nobody really knew anything about the SEALs. But when you have somebody who's a Marine who's talking about something better, do I personally believe he thinks the SEALs are better than the Marine Corps? No, he's a Marine. But I think he was really trying to reach me and say, okay, you got to go big, kid. You got something in your gas tank here. And so I looked into the SEALs, and I said, you know what? These guys do sea, they do air, they do land. That's their acronym for SEAL. Wow, they do it all. I want that. I want to do that, and I don't want to be a screw-up anymore. 9/11 happened, and that's really the piece that turned me over to saying I'm joining the military. So I saw the second tower implode, and I got up and left and went to the recruiter station. Unfortunately, I was too young to join, but months later, I did actually sign into the Navy with hopes of being a SEAL. And while in boot camp later on, I actually tested out, did my physical fitness test, and I was awarded the opportunity to go to BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. And that was class 245. So really excited. You know, I'm 19 years old, getting an acceptance into Navy SEAL training. I'm like, wow, I'm young. I cannot believe that my life dream that just happened a couple years ago is now a reality. I don't even know what I'm in for. I don't know what SEAL training is really like. I just read this one little piece on the Reader's Digest magazine that made it sound like we live on the moon and we breathe water and all this crazy stuff. I was like, you know, this is awesome. I'm going to do this. But showing up to SEAL training was a whole wild deal. We showed up in the Wednesday night of Hell Week for the class, two classes before us. And looking at these guys and seeing their faces, I could smell them before I could see them. Hell Week is the longest week we have in military training. It is the hardest to really separate the week from the world. And I'm looking at these guys. There's probably, 20 guys left out of maybe 200. And they're running past me, and I'm thinking to myself, how in the world am I going to do this? And it wasn't until the very last guy that ran by me that I knew I had what it takes. Because the last guy ran by me had this 1,000-yard stare, sand all over his face, completely cold, wet, tired, and miserable over it. And out of nowhere, he just turns to me, looks, and sticks his tongue out like, yeah, bro. And I said, awesome. No way, that's cool. That's exactly, okay, I got it. He's still alive. Let's do this.
I'm in.
Motivated, right? So that's exactly it. You know, I got super motivated, and we started class 245. And, yeah, we went through Hell Week, and that was the deal. I told my mom and my dad, you know, I'm going to go through this, and I'm going to give it my best. And, you know, the opportunity is, and I say this to new guys going through, if you quit during any part of training, remember, SEAL training is 100% volunteer. If you quit, it's on you. But if you make it, it's on them, meaning the instructors. They screwed up and didn't do their job to break you. So use that as your advantage and get through the program. And that's exactly what we did and what I did. And, you know, you meet some remarkable men along the way that, you know, they say, you know, what's the best part of your career, Ryan? You know, shooting the guns, becoming a sniper, doing all this. No. The best part about my job is I actually got to serve with heroes, legitimate heroes, not on comic books, but real deal heroes in this world, and call them my brothers. There's nothing like waking up in the morning and getting a text from your brother who is legitimately a hero saying, hey, man, let's hang out tonight. It's incredible. That's the community, the camaraderie that we have, and we're a very small niche group. Made it through Hell Week. Unbelievable. I stuck it to the man, I guess. I don't know, or maybe I hid. Who knows? But nevertheless, we got through the program and, you know, 6 months of SEAL training and then followed by some more training. And I was attached to SEAL Team 7 Alpha Platoon for my first deal. It was a pretty cool experience. Majority of the guys in my platoon were a lot older than me, a lot of war experience there and just a lot of experience, period.
How old were you at this point?
20.
Okay.
And so, you know, I really had a lot to prove. And, you know, that's the thing about that community is you always have to continually prove your worth. And it should be like that everywhere in the country. You know, we've gotten away from that. World War II, everybody just seemed to want to do what was right, what was honorable, and just get the job done. And we've lost sight with that. And I like that about the military is it's still that honor code. You know what? We're going to do it for you. We're going to do it for you. We're going to do it for you. We're going to do it for each other. And I'm just going to go and do it because I don't want somebody yelling at me And I don't want my reputation being destroyed because I'm that guy. And so your reputation starts at day one, and it follows you your entire career. So you have to continually, what they say, earn your trident every day. And that's what we do. So you get to serve with some of the hardest core guys on the earth. You get to see some of the most heroics overseas. Things that people don't know about, things that are not in books and movies, things that are untold and will always go untold. You just know that they happen. And I got to witness that stuff. And the cool thing is, like I said, I got to witness it. You know, I'm not that guy. The heroes that I watch do it, those are the incredible dudes that, you know, just seeing their heroics, but being a part of it. You know, making sure that the whole team came back and we did everything successfully and we accomplished a mission. That was it. So I did three platoons at Team 7. A platoon is basically where you're on a team and you go overseas to fight, and it's about a two-year program. So I did three of those back-to-back, all three of them Iraq. My first deployment, unfortunately, I got injured on my first in my first 3 months. We hit a roadside bomb and sent the entire vehicle home. We all lived. Everybody worked together, and everybody lived through it. But unfortunately, we had to go home for a little while, and then they shifted us out to the Philippines. So interesting about that deployment is I got Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. So I got both wartime deals within one deployment. And then, you know, I just didn't have enough. But the funny joke about me, like you said, being a bird and maybe being skinny earlier, I take
that
offense
was air
to that.
Quotes.
I take offense to that because I'm huge, okay? For all of you listening, I am absolutely huge. I am 5'10", 160 pounds of sheer fury. So huge. But that skinny guy that we're talking about, I thought, you know, how could I really be a warrior within a group of warriors? How can I really add to the team's mix? There's some big guys here, you know, hand to hand for me. It's years of experience. I got it. I want to be a sniper. I want to be a sniper because it's a technical job. It's a very difficult job. It's mathematics. It's learning wins. It's a lot of different coefficients of bullets. It's interesting, but I can actually make an impact by being a sniper. If I go pound to pound with a guy like, you know, Guy Mesger or a professional fighter, we know what's going to happen, you know? But if I was a sniper, I could be a dialed-in shooter. And to be a Navy SEAL, you got to be a shooter. So I said, you know, I'm going to go to sniper school. And I was very blessed to go through sniper school and make it. So that was my primary job, was I was a primary sniper in my platoon for my second deployment to Iraq. We went to Ramadi, Iraq in 2007. And then I was a squad leader in 2009 in Basra, Iraq. And so I did three deployments to Iraq. I did a deployment to Lebanon and the Philippines. And, yeah, it was just a great time in my 8 years. And really around 09, you know, after my third pump to Iraq, I realized that, you know, this war is dying. You know, there's still always going to be kinetic things going on. There's always going to be problems in the world. But as far as a war, it is slowing down. So it's time for me to slow down, go to recruit training center, or go to advanced training center and become an instructor, give back to the community. And that's what I did. I went to become an instructor at Advanced Training Command. And I can't even remember how long I was there, maybe 8 months to a year. And, you know, I was coming up on a 10-year mark, and I said, you know what, I've done what I wanted to do. I had a lot of fun. I really want to try other things. You know, I want to get out. I just made up my mind. This was it for me. This is my time. And so I got out and on a whim moved to Dallas, Texas. See, I was stationed in San Diego my whole career. But in Dallas, Texas, this is the Patriot state of shooting stuff. So I said, you know, I'm going to move here and see what I can make of myself. And, you know, it's a really incredible place, not only to, you know, raise a family, to start a business. The community is very community involved, and it's a very easy place to really reintegrate into society, as you know, from a soldier's aspect to a civilian. So I don't think I could have done anything I'm doing currently anywhere else in the country. So, you know, y'all got to move to Dallas, Texas, because this is America, baby.
Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for sharing your experience with us. So you talked about an extreme athlete. You mentioned carry the load, and people will walk along the Katy Trail. But for you, I guess that wasn't quite extreme enough. Can you tell us what you decided to do? I'll let you set it up.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's just it. You're right. I mean, it leads into the Bird's Eye View Project and why it exists. You know, we can do things as charities to really try to make buzz, try to make spotlight for the people we're supporting. But at the end of the day, a lot of the times we fall short of really hitting the masses. And that's the problem. We have to tell everybody we exist. people at least need to know that this charity is here to help when needed. And if we don't, if every person in the country doesn't know it, then we're failing. That's my theory. Carry the Load does this where you raise money as a team to go walk the trail to benefit these charities. Brilliant model. Absolutely works. It's just great design all around. But as I run a charity for a living, I said, well, how am I going to raise money for another charity when I'm raising money currently for my charity? I said, this is a difficult scenario for me. How do I do that? I said, you know what? We got to go big. And that's kind of our theme. We got to go big. You go big or go home. And so I said, okay, instead of walking the trail for 20 hours, which we have done the last couple of years to support Carry the Load, in fact, since its founding, let's go even bigger and let's just start out in Waco, Texas. And let's run from Waco to Dallas in 24 hours, 100 miles, and call it 100 for 100. Let's run 100 miles for $100,000 to support Carry the Load. Let's go for it. So put a team together. I got a coach because I'm notorious for getting a coach for everything I can do because I can't do anything. So there you have it. And I got on a regiment, and I only trained for about two and a half months seriously on running this thing. But, you know, like I said, when there's a will, there's a way. So the bigger you go, the more eyeballs are going to see what you're doing, and hopefully more funding will come behind that. And so we went out to Waco, and we started out, two of us, with a huge package of people that were supporting us along the road. In fact, my now wife, then fiance, ran, I think she ran 40 miles, you know? It's crazy. But everybody did their part to really help us get through the program, and I started in Waco, and 24 hours later, I landed in Dallas, Texas. And when we showed up, we came right into the final piece of Carry the Load to get greeted by everybody, and we raised quite a bit of money. I actually never realized the exact amount we raised because while some of the money came to our organization, some of the money went to Carry the Load, and so I wasn't sure what the final piece was, but I know we did way better than we would have just normally creating a team and walking the trail. And so that's the theory. If you want to make an impact and you want people to know about your charity, you got to go as big as you could possibly go. That is what the Bird's Eye View Project stands for, and the reason it exists is because the last 5 years, that's what we've been doing.
All right, so that's just one example of extreme things that you've done. We're going to get a picture, I guess, with the suit. So can you tell us maybe one memorable jump in the suit?
Well, the wingsuit, which we're talking about, most people refer to it as a squirrel suit. It looks like a flying squirrel, but it's actually called a wingsuit. And a wingsuit, it's a really cool and scary if you don't know what you're doing type deal. If you are thinking about wingsuiting in your life and you've never made a skydive, think again. They want you to have a minimum 200 skydives before you even start thinking about wingsuit flying because it is that much more dangerous.
Wow.
But a wingsuit design is to inflate with air so that you can actually glide. It's a graceful glide if you do it right. If you're me, it's not a graceful glide. But it's supposed to be a graceful glide, like tracking through the air to a designation. And it works. I mean, it's a really cool deal. We've actually, there's incredible companies like Phoenix Fly and Squirrel that make these awesome suits, and they're getting very technical behind it now, and the actual pros are really getting technical about body position to fly these things. But the best way you can look at a wingsuit is you are still falling the entire time. So imagine taking a chicken, grabbing a chicken that's flapping its wings and taking it up to the roof of your house and then throwing it up in the air. What's going to happen? It's going to flap its wings like crazy, but it is still going to fall to the ground. That's what a wingsuit is. No matter what, there's no thrust, there's no engine to it, so you're continually falling. And you hear a lot about the instances, the problems with wingsuits, people getting killed and impacting the earth and that because of bad decisions and because you can't generate enough lift to get around some of these objects. And so it's very technical. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not just strapping it on and jumping and flying. There's a lot that goes into it. A lot of my wingsuit flights currently have been, top-notch for spectators, not so much for me. But that's what makes good reality, right, is seeing the real deal of what it takes. So when you see me fly, you're like, holy cow, that's crazy. Then you can look at a professional and say, wow, gifted. They're very gifted. So, yeah. The wingsuit I have there is from Phoenix Fly, and it's a medium-sized suit. Can you imagine that's a medium-sized suit, and they get twice as big if you're a professional? It's like flying a California king-size bed.
Wow.
But you also feel like you're a warrior, you know, and that's – I truly believe it because, you know, in the military we put on gear, put on our body armor, get our gun. We're like, you know, a soldier or like a knight, You know, you strap your gear on, your shield armor, and you're ready to fight. With this, you strap your wingsuit on, put your helmet on. You're still doing the same jock up, the gear up, to get ready for battle. Battle here is jumping off and making a successful flight, which is still as high intensity as being in war, in my opinion. I've done both. So it's one of those deals. Don't do it unless you have trained to do it. But if you ever want to come watch it, contact the Bird's Eye View Project. We host events. We're getting ready to start telling the stories of our charities, and you can be at all these events to make sure that you know what's going on and to see these crazy events happen.
Outstanding. We need to take a break. Can you stick around for another segment?
I'm here.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get into some fun stuff with Ryan Parrott when we come back.
This is NHL All-Star goaltender Marty Turco, and you're listening to What's Good on Chidio.
Time for a quick plug. You're listening to Chidio. Chidio is a combination of the words charity and video. We are a platform on which celebrities create content for, by, and about cause. And Chidio is part of the charity network. Right now, we're joined by Carson Coldiron, who is the director of marketing for all of the charity network. Carson, how are you?
How are you, Drew? Good to be here.
Well, thank you for coming by. The other two platforms on the Charity Network are Prizeo and Charity Buzz. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what each company is and does, and then we'll talk about what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Charity Buzz is a luxury auction platform where we auction off all sorts of different kinds of items and experiences and everything from memorabilia to the chance to meet your favorite celebrity or walk the red carpet. And the proceeds go to benefit different kinds of charities. Prizeo is similar, where donations benefit the charity, but it's a sweepstakes platform. So it's more of a raffle where I can donate $10 for the chance to win that experience rather than on Charity Buzz where I have to bid a certain amount to win.
Awesome. All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on each platform?
Yeah, so right now on Charity Buzz, we have one of our biggest events of the year. We host a entrepreneur auction every year annually that features business experiences from all sorts of well-known entrepreneurs like Richard Branson and Kevin O'Leary and Mark Cuban and tons of other well-known business leaders that are donating their time for the chance to provide business experiences that we then auction off for charity.
Cool. So how do people get details?
So if you go to charitybuzz.com, you could sign up for more information. You'll see it on the homepage, or you can go to entrepreneur.charitybuzz.com and you'll see even more details. Either one will get you where you need to go.
Awesome. And what's happening on Prizeo?
Prizeo, we got a lot of cool campaigns going on. We're always launching different stuff with different celebrities. Right now we have a campaign going on with the model Cara Delevingne, who was just in Suicide Squad. We're also launching some campaigns around a couple athletes, and we have this really awesome WWE package currently going on for Susan G. Komen that started in the month of October for Breast Cancer Awareness Month that is a chance for you and four friends to go to WWE's WrestleMania and get the full VIP package, flights, hotel, get to meet superstars, the whole nine.
Awesome. Where do they go for that?
Prizeo.com/WWE. Prizeo is Prizeo.com.
Carson Coldiron, thanks for stopping by.
Anytime. Thanks.
This is Emmitt Smith on Chidio. Let's have some fun. Let's get down on Chidio today.
Welcome back. We're here with Ryan Birdman Parrott, founder of the Bird's Eye View Project. His mantra is extreme sports for extreme needs. So speaking of extreme, you're living out an extreme adventure in your own household these days, aren't you?
the most extreme adventure of a lifetime.
Well, congratulations on having your first child. How are things going?
Thank you. They're going well. You know, we had a son. His name is Caston, and he is absolutely everything. Just, you know, it's when you lock eyes with him and you smile. He's 2 months old currently, and he's just a blessing. I'm definitely proportional to my baby. You know, he's my son, so I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's the most beautiful son in the world. But he really is a good-looking baby, and he's got a heart of gold already. And so, yeah, it's the greatest gift, and it is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. There's no question that being a
parent. Life's a little different now, huh?
Completely different, and it's unbelievable, and people just say, oh, you got more to come. So the neat thing about it, you know, people say, oh, you're a Navy SEAL, so you can deal with this. You can deal with the sleepless nights and all that stuff. But in SEAL training, there's a start and there's an end. There's no end to parenthood.
Correct.
So that's really the kicker in it. But, hey, for anybody who's on the fence about having a kid, you got to. It's just so worth it. It's the greatest gift ever.
All right. Operation Miracle Jump, obviously it takes a lot of traveling, a lot of training. So was your wife aware of this prior to you going in, or did you have to give her a sales pitch? And if so, how did that go?
That sales pitch, yeah, I think I'm the best at pitching my wife because there's always something that comes up. But I think she knew what she was marrying into when she married me, you know, coming from a special forces community or special operations community. And then, you know, going into, I've been a skydiver, you know, I've been a snowboarder, and I like extreme sports. I like things that get my heart going. And the adventure of an extreme sport typically happens in a beautiful atmosphere, a beautiful place. You know, I go to Switzerland, you know, go to Moab, Utah. There's beautiful places that these events happen. So I definitely talked to her in the interim phase before we even had children or thought about children. Said, hey, are you cool with me, you know, moving this project forward? Because there is potential I can get hurt. There's potential that I could get really hurt. And there's even a chance that I could die. And that's just the nature. I mean, and it's no different than walking outside and getting killed by a car accident, or, you know, being on your cell phone and making bad decisions. But there is inherent risk with this sport, and there's inherent risk with putting things together that has never been done before. But she knows that my life, I lead my life through God to do charity work, because we have to give back. That's the way our country was founded, and that's the way our country should and still be. So there are a lot of people who still believe that. I'm one of those people. So there's been a lot of talk about it, and I just tell her, and she knows that every single time I go out to train, I'm extremely methodical about what I do. I'm always surrounded by coaches. I've never made a base jump or a wingsuit flight without a coach. I'm always surrounded by coaches, and we make very good decisions. And the biggest thing with base jumping is you have to be man enough to walk away from the jump for the day. If the environment's telling you no, if you're just not feeling, your spidey senses are kicking, whatever it may be, there's always a way to walk away. And so walk away to live, to fight another day, to jump another day. So, you know, now that we have a child, there's a lot more involved. It's harder because he's so young that, you know, we have to be there to take care of him and that. But I just have to give it that every bit of my energy when I'm doing this training. And I really have to pay attention to what I'm doing because there's a lot more on the line. And, you know, sometimes I look at myself and I'm like, am I being selfish by doing this? But we started and signed up for this to do it to help others. And really, all I'm trying to do right now is mitigating every piece of risk I can and going through it as methodically as possible to make this home run hit. And you know what? Hopefully someday that my son will, you know, look at me as the man that he should be looking at, which is a guy who can guide him to be, you know, better than me, but to always go after his goals and dreams to support others.
So extreme sports are different from regular sports, if you will, and that you don't just pick up a ball and start throwing with someone else. So when did you start getting into extreme sports or figure out that you had a love for them?
Yeah, I think my, as much as I'd hate to say it, I think my dad kind of screwed me, but I think it's both sides. So my mom used to love riding roller coasters, and kind of funny growing up, when she'd ride roller coasters, I would cry on the bottom of the hill saying, don't go because you're never going to come back. Yeah, I was that wimpy little boy. But my dad, when I was really young, we went out to Kentucky, and he put me in a wind tunnel. So I got to actually go in one of those, what they are now called, like iFlies, and these wind tunnels that people go in indoor skydive. But he put me in one when I was young, and I really loved it. And it's just going out to the ski hills. I grew up on the ski hills. And you go out there, and the first thing you do is you follow your brother around. And my brother's a skier. He's an incredible skier. Now he's a snowboarder. But he would go off these little jumps, and he would do these things. And it's like, okay, it doesn't matter how good I am or how young I am. If he's doing it, I'm doing it. And so, and I'm going to do it bigger and better, and he's going to know it. And that's where it really went to. And I think, you know, you go to a certain level before something really tips you over. And that was the SEAL teams for me, because, you know, you really, really play hard and you fight hard. And when you get back, you go out and do what you want to do. But how do we blow off steam? By creating other steam.
There you go. Yeah. So what do you think about safer sports like golf, basketball, tennis? Do they generate any type of interest to you, or is it just it's all about the rush?
You know, it is a lot about the rush, but I enjoy different types of sports. I played hockey growing up my whole life. You know, I really love ice hockey. I never played football. Never got really into football. Really didn't have a team to look at as a football team. You know, I grew up in Detroit. We had the Lions. So I did get to see Barry Sanders play, which was super cool. But other than that, when he left, it was kind of downhill for a long time. But, you know, I like sports for what they are. I think that there are some athletes that are absolutely pinnacle athletes. Like Jason Witten, in my eyes, is one of the most monumental athletes because he is an absolute athlete. He's a strong character. He's the man that you would hope you'd want him to be on and off the battlefield. He's just that guy. And I would wish that more athletes were like Jason Witten. There's a lot of athletes that are doing stupid stuff. You see it on the news. I'm not even going to name names because that's giving credit to somebody who doesn't deserve it. Athletes have a role and a role model status. They can use it for good or bad. And that's what I don't like about normal sports is it's gotten too commercialized today where there's too many, you know, what's in it for me versus I'm a community-driven guy and I'm blessed to be here. Extreme sports, what I really love about them is, yeah, the intensity is one thing and just doing them is great. But the communities, they don't seek recognition for it. They don't make a lot of money doing it. They do it for the purity of the sport. It's still that purity, you know, like when you say, okay, we got a guy who's playing junior hockey and he wants to make the NHL. He's given everything he's got every single game just for that shot to get to the NHL. That's the purity. That's the, like, the perfect place to be. A lot of college sports like that as well, trying to get to the next level. That's extreme sports across the board. Because whether you're going to make it or not, you're still doing exactly what you love, and there's purity in that. And so that's why I really like them. And like I said, it takes you to some of the most incredible destinations in the world. I never thought I was going to be base jumping off of a paraglider in the Swiss Valley surrounded by the Alps. As dangerous as you think it sounds, it is incredible to do something like that. You know, and so that's the spirit.
My adrenaline's pumping now just listening to you talk, but what do you do to relax, or are you always focused on the next?
Well, currently with a two-month-old at home, my relaxation comes with sleep, and very few and far between. Every time I get to log some hours in bed, I'm in. You know, and mentioning things like golf and that, you know, I think that there's a purpose for everything, and I think you can find passion in every single thing that's out there. That's why it's created. But really, my relaxation comes with looking back and saying, what have we accomplished? What have we done? And how are we moving the ball forward? But I get a lot of that out of my family. I really devote myself to my family. And that's really what gives me that relaxation and that comfort, saying, okay, no matter what, times get rough or it's a stressful day or whatever, because we all have those days, I can always revert that back to the fact that I'm a very lucky individual.
You've assembled quite a team for this project heading toward Operation Miracle Jump. So does anyone say no to you?
That's a great question. See, I'm really, really good at selling people on this awesome theory. Problem is, once we build a theory, how do we move it forward is the question. You know, like I said, I've been very blessed. I've met a lot of wonderful people, and I think that was one of my gifts from God, is that I am supposed to put teams together to accomplish a mission. That's really my focus, is putting the right teams together to accomplish the mission. And so looking at, what do we all have to do here? Well, I need base jumping coaches. I need wingsuit coaches. I need physical fitness coaches. But I need them to be real. I need them to be elite, because we are now risking our life fully. 100-mile run, there's definitely risk there. It's a lot. A year after that, I did a PBR bull ride, and you know, for another charity, for the Chris Kyle Memorial Benefit. And there's risk with that, obviously. But there's just, I had coaches for each one of these. And so when you go for the coaches, you know, I went for PBR world champion Luke Snyder coach, and he trained me to do this. You know, 100-mile run, I worked with a doctor to make sure that, you know, physiology, I was ready for this. But for this, it's so technical, and it's so many years of experience to get to this level, and I'm trying to jam it into 2 years. I had to go to the top. And so what do? You ask. That's the biggest thing. You just ask. You're going to get some no's. You're going to get some yeses. But when you say, we're doing this, we're making it epic, it's the first of its kind, it's never been done before, oh, yeah, and it's going to benefit people who deserve it. That's the kicker. So really, it's not me selling it. It's what's normal and what America's founded on that sells it. Give it back.
And you talked about the brotherhood you share with the guys you served with. Are you sensing the same? Do you get the same experience working with this team? Are you guys going to share a bond that just will not go away?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time we make a leap, you know, we're chancing it. And so, yeah, there's a lot at the end of it. I mean, it's a quick bond. It's a tight bond, and we talk to each other a lot. And the unique thing about this is these are not two pockets of people that usually hang out, and veterans and or military and base jumping community are two different groups of individuals. Not saying that we don't intermingle at times, but it's not the norm. And now through this, we're seeing a lot of base jumpers supporting the veteran and first responder communities through our efforts and vice versa. So that cross-pollination is becoming more evident, which is really cool. But there is definitely a bond. Anytime you're willing to go attempt something as a team, there's a bond, and I like that.
All right, well, our goal here is, like I said, to give you the megaphone to help you generate the awareness. Anything else you want to plug before we wrap up with the final five?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really want you all to listen, and I want you to go to the birdseyeviewproject.org, and I want you to follow our journey. I really want you to like our social media, share it out to all your people, and just tell people that here's what we're doing. But the biggest thing in this whole project, if you watch all our videos or you watch one, I want you to go to each one of the charities that we've posted that we've chosen to benefit, and I want you to go learn about them, because you may know somebody in your lifetime that starts to experience an injury that these people counter down on, and now you have an avenue to take them. So if you don't know, if you don't have the awareness, go get some. Go to the birdseyeviewproject.org, check out the charities that we're supporting, make a donation. We cannot operate without funding, because our funding is going directly to these charities so they can function to do what they're supposed to. And buy some cool swag. We are all about making cool swag that you can be proud to wear. Very American-driven, very fired up. And, you know, we appreciate you just taking an interest in what we're doing.
Awesome. You ready for the final five?
Final five, bring it.
All right, you live in Texas. Tex-Mex or barbecue?
Barbecue.
Movie, Stripes or Police Academy?
Stripes.
Triathlon or run from Waco to Dallas?
Ooh, that's triathlon.
All right, nail the perfect extreme stunt or being a dad?
Being a dad.
And sea, air, or land?
Air, for sure.
All right, Ryan, well, thank you for your time today, and thank you for your service. I think people have a natural affinity to watch the extreme, but to know why you're doing what you're doing makes it easy to rally around you and support what you're doing. So best of luck continuing to raise that awareness for our veterans and first responders.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you for telling our story for us.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Hi there, I'm Rain Wilson, and I'm on Chidio. Watch things change.
That does it for this episode of What's Good. Thanks again to our guest, Ryan Birdman Parrott, founder of both Sons of the Flag and the Bird's Eye View Project. To learn more about Ryan and the project, head on over to birdseyeviewproject.org. You can also visit whatsgood.chidio.com to hear the archives of previous shows, and you can subscribe to this podcast at iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Thanks again to Carson Coldiron for telling us what's going on over at Prizeo and Charity Buzz. And lastly, to find over 100 celebrities creating content for, by, and about cause, come see us at chidio.com. This is Drew Hamilton wishing you well. We'll see you next time on What's Good.